the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Welcome in to another edition of the Monday Mailbag. I'm your host, Cassio, and I'm joined by the man of the hour, the man with the power, Mr. Nick Patrick. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, man. The man with the power. Holy crap. We're in trouble.
You're in charge of this thing.
Yeah, man. Everybody, I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's going down over at Deep South, man. Things going rocking and rolling.
Yes, sir. We got a show coming up on the 16th. And got a lot of really cool things in the fire, man. Got a really good card. This should be a good, really good card for us. And I got some friends coming by to see me, some, you know, that I hadn't seen in a long time that I worked with in WC, not wrestler friends, but production friends that worked in WWE and WCW actually. And wow. People coming by to check us out. And, our Deep South kids that I've sent out to Reality of Wrestling by the time this airs, they will have been out there. And on our very next show, I'll be able to give an update on how things went, because we sent Nauseousism is out. He's out there. He's in the Battle Royal. And Skrilla the Great's going out there, and so is Jacob Johnson. All three of them are going out to be looked at. I'm not sure who's wrestling who, but I do know for sure that Nauseousism is going to be in that Battle Royal. So yeah. We'll have some info on how everything went with everybody. And it's a good time here at Deep South, man. We got a lot of cool things in the fire, and things are looking real bright right now.
Man, can't wait to hear about that. You got a lot of stuff in the fire right now. So it's always good to hear those updates. And let's jump into it. Let's get to some questions from all of our top guys and top gals. Remember, if you want to be a part of this show, you drive the show. You let us know where to go. Be sure to comment below wherever you are consuming this podcast. Make sure you comment below. We'll take all those that we can, and we will let Mr. Nick Patrick answer them live here on the podcast. Are you ready, Nick?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's crank it up. Simon C. He was our first question, so he gets to go first. He said, Nick, did your dad ever wrestle without a mask?
Yes, he did. There was a period of time when I was a kid, and I was still in elementary school. I don't think I was in middle school yet. And they were having a promotional war here in Georgia, actually. And Pop and Tom found out that the other group, because I guess there was people that, because there was friends from both sides, but they found out that the other group was going to expose their identities. And, you know, and back then that was big stuff, you know, yeah. Kayfabe was huge. So Pop and Tom just made an angle out of it and beat them to the punch and made some money out of it. And they took their masks off themselves. And did a little angle run with it with her mask off there for a while. But that happened. Well, it was in the 70s. So I was mid-70s, around, you know, mid-70s-ish, around that time. Maybe a little, you know, early 70s, probably.
And then how long did they go without the mask?
It didn't last, you know, about a year maybe. Maybe not even that long.
And then
they did it for the angle, and then they did another angle. I don't remember how they got back into it, but they got back into putting the mask back on again. So they made a storyline out of it, but they beat them to the punch, so, you know, and made money out of it. So it worked out okay.
Simon wants to know also, he said, also I hear it's very different wrestling in a mask. What are the main things that the wrestlers have to do to be great mask wrestlers?
Well, first you got to, it's timing and breathing and getting used to wearing it, period, you know, is one thing. But really, from a performance standpoint, it takes away all of your facial expression. When you're selling and whatever you're doing, you have to do it all with body expression and body language. There's a lot more pantomime to your selling part of your work, because the facial expression has been taken pretty much out of the equation. But that's really the main difference is that, realizing that you have to be more animated with all your body language But other than that, it would be more like getting used to wearing the apparatus. I mean, if I had to wear a mask now, I think I'd like to have one like Mysterio that's got all that open down here, man.
Yeah.
You know, instead of them old school ones like Pop War, man, it was like being your face wrapped like a friggin' mummy almost. That'd be tough, especially in a hot summertime, you know. I used to wonder about that. Pop, man, back in the day, him and Tom, they had them long body suits. They were full body suits and masks working back in the day, there wasn't air conditioned buildings they was working in down here in the South, man. Then I can remember Pop bringing some gear home at certain nights and having to swap it out. Cause after you sweat, you throw it in your bag. Just by the time you get home and you open that bag back up, holy mackerel, man. It's like, woo. You got to really double wash some of that stuff, you know, especially the material that the old school, you know, outfit and uniforms and costumes were made out of. Tights is what I guess would be the proper terminology for it. But, yeah, man, back in the day, I couldn't imagine. But that would be that. Back to the mask part, really just like you're selling an animation. You just have to, you know, you have to, because your facial expression is all taken out of it.
How many masks do you think he had at one time?
Who, my dad?
Yeah, what was the most? Did he run through them a lot, or did he?
Yeah, especially because they were always involved in big angles, you know, and they would and there was always juice involved, you know, and so when they would pop, would have them rip the mask open so they'd be able to get to it, you know, and so they'd go through masks. But my mom used to make them for him. They bought, really? When they was going to Japan, they found somebody in Mexico that made really good masks, and they liked the way they felt and the pattern. And my mom looked at it and said, I could take that apart and I could make those, you know, which I'm sure. Buying them in Mexico, especially back then, it would probably have been cheaper and a lot easier just to buy them in Mexico. But my mom, she took the patterns apart and made the mask for Pop and for Tom. Back when in the day when you seen she'd make the solid black, gold, and then back in the day they had two tone the black and gold mask. She made all them out of patterns that she got from a mask that they got in Mexico way back in the day.
I bet her making them, though, could help her kind of customize the fit so it'd be a little bit more comfortable for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, she had to customize the fit for them a lot because they went to Japan a lot back in the day. And Pop and Tom, there was a time, this is a funny story, man. They go over to Japan and you know, it's, everything is carbs over there. And they take you out after every show and you're eating a late night and carbs. And Pop and Tom showed up over there and they'd be over there 6-8 weeks at a time. You know, they've been like 3 months over there at a time. And Pop and Tom showed up there. The first week they were there, they ordered, they went to this expensive tailor and had a bunch of suits made. By the time they left and went back home, each one of them had put on almost 50 pounds because nothing that they bought fit, man. They had the both of them come home and they was trying to lose weight so they could get back in all that stuff. As you said, next time we go, well, I mean, every night pounding rice and beer and blah, 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 you know, and Pop, had a diabetes problem, you know, and as a young man, never really addressed it. And as an older man, he had no choice but to address it. And in the final stages of his life, he just decided, hell, I'm going to eat what I want to do. And I'm not sticking my damn finger anymore. So, you know, so when he ended up going in the hospital there toward the end, that his blood sugar level was boom, you know, but what are you gonna say? You know, it's the way he wanted to do it, you know. And so, you know, it was his death, you know, his way to choose, you know. So, let's get off of that. They've made
a lot of advancements in the diabetes world, man. It used to not be like it is now.
Hey, Pop is so funny. Pop, different little things used to agitate him, and I never could understand, you know, different TV commercials, and he'd see it and just, I hate that character. Man, you get awful worked up over a TV commercial. And Pop denied that he had diabetes because he didn't like the way that it was pronounced when they were saying diabetes. He liked the way old Wilford Brimley said diabetes.
I don't have no damn diabetes.
Because in the South, everybody said diabetes, you know, and that's how you pronounce it, you know, but Pop, we're from the Midwest, you know, and Pop had one of the, he heard it was diabetes, you know, and that's why if you didn't pronounce it that way, then by God, I didn't have it. You ain't pronouncing it right, so I don't got it. Okay.
when your dad was in the prime of his wrestling, what was his size usually? I know it changed a little bit, but
it fluctuated. But normally a good healthy size when he was able to really move good, he was around 270, a little under 270.
And how tall was he?
Oh, he was like 5'10". Pop wasn't really tall. I'm 6'1", and Pop was under 6 foot, so he was 5'10", 5'11".
Really?
Yeah.
God, he seemed so menacing.
Yeah.
Not that that's sick. A small guy, like but a tank.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he is big.
Yeah.
Big and wide. It's just a menacing figure. That shows you how you can get yourself like seem more menacing, your character.
And that eye contact and that serious tone in his voice. You know, when somebody's looking you right in your
voice,
eye and they're telling you something that you believe, it makes them look bigger and feel bigger than life. You know,
like you said, that goes back to him having to figure out how to emote without your facial expression.
Yeah, because exactly.
Wow, that's good stuff. G Slade has our next question. He said, "Hey, gents. No clue if you have feedback on this or not, but you mentioned music as an indie artist. I wonder if you have any feedback on the better music distribution services. I've been on DistroKid for years, but I'm interested in starting to submit music for placement in TV and other media. I wonder if DistroKid is what I should stick with. If that doesn't register on your radar of expertise, apologies. And if that's the case, I don't think that's your specialty, right?
No, it's not. But I'm telling you, the kid that Eric Adams that runs stuff for me, he's all kind of plugged into that stuff, the local music scene and different musicians and promotion and stuff. And so if you look up Eric Adams on Facebook, and he works with me at Deep South, and he can, especially in the Atlanta area, actually anywhere, you know, he can plug you up with that kind of info.
He's also on y'all's Instagram, of course, as well. So Deep_South Wrestling, look up Deep South Wrestling on Instagram as well. And Eric's got a profile, and you can message him. So Slade backed it up because he knew we might not be there. But he said, my question is now, which wrestler smelled the worst in the ring before the match even started? And did the Nasty Boys armpits, were they working armpits or shoot armpits?
They were shoot armpits, but they were clean. You know, they somebody would have killed them before they got that far. But as far as somebody stinking in the ring,
before they even started.
I can't think of, there's no main guys that did because everybody has to work with everybody else. And that's something you get smartened up to as you're really young, you know. There's been a couple other guys that had, you know, been on the road for like 3 weeks and your knee braces and stuff get so funky that, you know, that you could, you know, but hell, that happens to everybody at some point in time, you know. But there was no, you know, anybody that was foul smelling and nobody would want to work with them, you know? So somebody would always, you know, smarten them up. Hey dude, man, take a shower, put on some friggin' deodorant, you know?
Yeah. We're working and together.
Wear some clear kinds. So when you're raising your arms up in the ring, you're not caked with white stuff under your arms.
That's a good call. Never thought about that.
Yeah.
Well, he said, seemed like their opponents really sold them as putrid. Have a great day, gentlemen. Thank you, Slade. Appreciate that, man. And good luck with the music career as well. Find Eric.
Yeah, man. Good luck. Yeah, check out Eric, man. He can help you out on different platforms. He's got a lot of friends that's in the music business, and he's pretty well connected.
Let's keep it going. Tony Flowers sent us a message and said, "Hey guys, some wrestlers have a reputation as being unpredictable or difficult to work with. guys like Bruiser Brody and others, according to Tony Flowers. Were you ever reffing a match where you thought, I have no idea what this guy is going to do? And how do you as a ref handle an uncooperative wrestler?
You just kind of go with the flow as a ref and see what's playing out before you. You know, it's not you. You're not in there tussling with the guy. You know, I know it's a dance that we're all in, but usually everybody should be pretty much on the same page before you go out there, because that's our showcase and it's how we make our living. And you don't want to, if you're going to beef or something ain't right, you fix it in the back. You fix it before you go out there. That's, like I said, it's our showcase. You know, and you have to have more respect for the, not just the industry, but for every person in the locker room that's making a living, you know, but going out there and acting a damn fool and letting some personal bullshit take over your professionalism. I can't really say anybody that was unpredictable that I didn't know, you know, if they were going to go off and sit and shoot, because no, but like I said, you have to work with other people. If you're an ass like that, nobody's going to, especially no top guy. You know, if somebody act like that, I can see Undertaker right now. Now, I ain't working with that idiot. You know, he's just, you know, and you got to, if you're unpredictable and you don't know what you can do, then you're still basically, there's a mark in you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And generally that gets flushed out before it ever gets to the major level. You know, there's guys that get kind of full of themselves at the next level, but you know, things always have a way of playing themselves out, you know. And as far as being dangerous and being afraid, I never was really afraid to work with anybody. A little bit with Abdullah, because you never knew, because he had blades all over him. You never knew if he could just grab you, if he was going to get poked or whatever, you know. I've been poked accidentally a bunch of times, man.
Really?
I had Brian Pillman stick a blade right in my friggin' bicep on TV one time.
Oh.
I got a little scar on my bicep from Brian Pillman. It was funny because he had to get juice, right? And he hit it and he just got like maybe two little drips, you know. And he went to hand it to me and he went, hey, Nick, here. And he went, boom, and he stuck it right in my bicep. And I looked down and I went, and I just brushed it off and stepped on it. I was like, holy shit. You know, he just stuck that in my arm. And so stuff kept going. So I ended up scooping it, you know, and ended up putting it in my pocket so it was out of the way. And I'm working and I look down and there's a damn trail of blood going from my bicep down my forearm and down my finger and dripping off my finger. And I look down, I'm like, holy shit, that looked like he had two drips on his forehead. And I looked like somebody had just shot me in the arm with a .22. I was like, oh,
he got the perfect spot on you.
Yeah, I was like, oh man, I'm trying to, and you try to wipe it and it's a smear, you know. I looked down because it felt warm, you know, but I was into the match and I looked down and I was in one spot for a minute, you know, and I had my hand down on my knees kind of, and I felt on my finger. I looked down, I said, what the hell's that on my finger? And I looked, and it was that blood and it dripped all the way down my arm, off my damn finger.
What'd you do?
It wasn't a bad cut. It didn't need stitches or nothing, but it was just in a little spot that bleeds like crazy.
Just can't bleed. Like,
yeah. It burnt more than anything. When he stuck it in, I'm like, shit.
Speaking of Brian Pillman, he's one of those guys that as a fan seemed, I would say, unpredictable more than difficult. But what did you think about him?
Was he under?
Yeah,
that was more of his gimmick.
Behind the scenes and everything in the ring, he was great.
Yeah, great guy. Easy to work with. You know, he had his personal things, you know, but that was personal. You know, in the ring, he was tremendous.
All right, let's keep it going. Adam Krasnov says the 1994 War Games match was the Rhodes family and the Nasty Boys versus the Stud Stable. When the WWE released a War Games DVD many years later, Dusty revealed that Colonel Robert Parker crapped his pants in this match. I recently rewatched the match and saw you were one of the referees for it. So what do you recall about the situation? We know that referees hold up the X sign whenever there's an in-ring injury. However, This raises another question. How is communication handled whenever a bathroom accident occurs in the ring? So
that's the only time that's ever really I've seen that happen is sometimes a guy's finish will do that to you, you know. But as far as that being a problem, I've seen that happen on the indies once or twice. It's kind of disgusting. But I've never really seen, you know, at the major level like that. And I didn't know at all that that happened to Colonel Rob. And that really? Was really bad. Oh, man, that would have been horrifying in that white suit, that damn Colonel Sanders suit. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, I didn't know that happened.
I wonder if that was a rib by Dusty on the DVD where he knew he could slide it in and
get a good
jab at Colonel Parker.
Yeah, it must have been.
I feel like in the white, you definitely would have seen it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there were certain guys finishes that could damn near do that to you, you know. It's that running stampede that Dr. Death Steve Williams used to give, man. That even though he was protecting you with it, you know, you're taking a shot, you know, power bombs, you're taking a shot, you know, but that running one, boom, a couple of those running deals where the guy's coming down on top of you and both of your weights are crashing down. Well, things can happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, you just hope that it's not too bad.
Do you remember anybody having to stop a match because they were sick or because they felt like they needed, hey, man, I'm about to go. I got to wrap up.
I've seen guys roll out and get sick, roll under the ring, throw up underneath the ring. And,
really?
And come back in. I saw a funny story from back in the day. Brad Armstrong is wrestling Buzz Sawyer. We're in South Georgia. Buzz was wild, man, back in the day. And if he'd been on a 3 or 4 day binge, not eating, he'd get to the building. And before his match, he'd be starving because he hadn't eaten a few days. He'd been, you know, running wild. And this particular day, he decided he's going to eat like 4 or 5 hot dogs before he went out and worked with Brad Armstrong, right? So there are about 5 of them, and Buzz was going to try to blow Brad up because, you know, we were all young. And so Buzz is out there just, you know how he was, man. He was going like hell. About 6-8 minutes into this match, Buzz rolls out to the floor and lets rip like the friggin' Exorcist, man. It was just disgusting. And people on the front row, there was 1 or 2 people on the front row, I think, that got sick too. But Brad had rolled out to the floor, and it happened. And boom, as Brad rolled out on the floor, because Buzz wanted him to come out, and they were going to fight on the floor. But the fight didn't happen. Buzz got sick, and then Brad got sick, and a couple of people on the front row got sick. And I was like, oh, my God. It was, like, unbelievable. But they just got away from it and kept going. They had their match, and they ended up going a 10-minute time limit draw, right? So they're at the end of the 10-minute time limit draw. Now Buzz was insane. He could roll out and throw up like that, because I've seen him do it a bunch of different times, and just wipe his face off and roll back in and go back 100 miles an hour again. I'm like, how the hell did he do that? You know, that's just insane. But
they're getting to the end of the 10-minute draw.
Oh, yeah. So they're at the 10. They go 10 minutes through, right? So Buzz is out on the floor, right? And he looks at me and says, tell him to ask for 5 more minutes. So I said, hey, Brad, he wants you to ask for 5 more minutes. And Brad goes, oh, shit. You know, because he doesn't throw it up. He just wants it just to be over with. You know, he goes, how about 5 more minutes? And Buzz milks the crowd, and the people are like, yeah, except for the people that got sick on the front row. the people are with it. It was a good house, man. And the people was with it, and Buzz looked at Brad and goes, make it 10 more minutes. And Brad has the microphone. He goes, no, we can do it in 5. It was one of the moments that I broke kayfabe and just busted out laughing my ass off. But they ended up doing 5 more minutes, and Buzz wanted to try to get him to do it again. And Brad was like, no, I'm not doing that again.
Why did Buzz throw up all the time?
He would just get blown up.
Work himself into a frenzy.
He would eat too much before his match. He would be starving because he, you know, like I said, sometimes he'd go a couple of days and not eat or nothing, you know. And all of a sudden, you're just stuffing friggin' hot dogs like John Belushi in Animal House, man. It was like crazy. It's a terrible outcome, too.
Man. All right. Let's see. Adam Krasnoff wants to know. He says, Nick, Teddy Long has confessed that he once got taken to wrestler's court in WWE for selling Viagra.
Yeah.
Do you remember this? And do you have any other stories you could share regarding Teddy Long and his backstage antics? Now,
if I know one thing from this show,
you got some Teddy Long stories since you traveled so much.
Yeah.
So do you remember him going to wrestler's
court? I wasn't there when it happened, but everybody gave me blow-by-blow detail about it when I got there.
Really?
Because it was incredibly funny, man. He had old Mae Young representing him as his lawyer. And she come out and she goes, "I don't know what's wrong with all you young boys using all that dadgum Niagara. You're supposed to be hard all the time anyway." You know, just so that was his defense, and he lost.
What
happened is they had this commission doctor that would show up, and he liked the boys, and he would always bring enough for everybody. And Teddy would catch him at the door and get all of it and sell it to the boys.
And then resell it?
Yeah. And the boys caught him on it. And so that was it. The boys were like, "Hell no." So they busted him out on wrestler's court for that. Yeah, but that's a true story. That did happen.
Well, what happens if you're found guilty like he was?
They'll bust your balls a little bit. You know, it's mostly done in fun. When I get the serious wrestler's court, and I've seen a couple of those, then usually after, you know, then they bosses huddle up there at the end, and it's more like shaming the person that effed up, you know what I mean? And by letting them know how everybody feels, you know what I mean? I've seen that happen a couple of times. But wrestler's court, generally speaking, was more of a tip. But it was like ribbon on the square, you know what I mean? Yeah. They were seriously calling out the situation, but doing it in a funny way, you know what I mean?
That's great stuff. Let's see what Sean R's got to say. He said, "Mr. Patrick, one of my favorite wrestlers growing up was the Masked Superstar. Do you have any good stories of Bill Eadie?" Of course, Bill Eadie, some of you may know also as Axe, part of Demolition. Just an incredible career for Mr. Bill Eadie. What kind of tales can you tell us about him?
Bill was a great guy, and I didn't ever work with him a lot as Axe, but I worked with him a lot as a Superstar. And back in the day, he was one of the guys that was going to Japan a lot. He had a big Japan deal, him and Hanson and Brody and Abdul. All those guys were going to Japan a lot. You know, they made their main deal over there. And they had, you know, they'd come back and they'd be top guys, you know, wherever they, you know, in Georgia or Carolina or Florida, wherever, you know. But every time they'd go over there, they'd be over there for several weeks. And when you're in Japan, it's different, man. They work very snug, very stiff, and some of them will just knock the living crap out of you. And they want you to hit them back, you know, and the guys that got over, usually the ones that went over and just hammered people, man. And that's why Hanson and those guys, they just wham, they would just literally turning people inside. I do just beating the living crap out of people, right? So when they come back and work, they were used to beating the shit out of somebody every night for several weeks, and they were a little stiff until they kind of got acclimated back to working normal style. So Bill's working with this big, tall kid named Snake Brown, super nice guy, but crazy. He's funny. Look at that big, wild hair and just a big, tall guy, right? So the match, like, they lock up, and Bill just pulls him into the corner and lights him up with two or three big shots, and they were there, man. And Snake ran across the ring and dropped to his ass in the opposite corner and covered his head. And he goes, "Referee, referee, arrest that man. He's trying to kill me." And I looked at Bill, and Bill looked at me, and you couldn't tell he was laughing because he had that mask on, and he busted out belly laughing at Snake. and now back then it was, kayfabe was still kind of prevalent, you know, this is studio, Georgia Championship Wrestling studio days, you know, and now I'm busting out laughing, and I'm trying to cover up at Snake, but then they kept on, they had the match, you know, but we had that moment there where we just broke down and looked at each other and just It was like a belly laugh moment for a minute, man. And even the people out there kind of popped. But the building lighting up, it just, they finished it out. Poor Snake, after he got finished, was like, oh, dear God. Let him be back for a couple of weeks before you book me with him.
Please, please, let him cool down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he hammered him. He didn't mean to. You know, it didn't, you know, it wasn't like broken.
Yeah, nose, yeah.
Nothing. It was there. it was there.
All right, let's keep it going. Let's see what we got. Sean R. Says, Mr. Patrick, one more if you have time. We got a couple more. Cool. He said, everyone always wants to know about Black Saturday. What do you remember about the last Saturday night before Black Saturday? What was the feeling amongst the talent? Thank you. I love the show. So we'll go back a week before Black Saturday. Did you guys see writing on the wall? Were there rumors, or was it a normal
show? No, there wasn't rumors at all. So we had no clue.
Normal show.
Yeah, I knew nothing. I told my story about running into Vince in the yeah. control room before, but yeah, we didn't have a clue, man. But they kayfabed us a lot on stuff back then. You know, every time that the company had been sold, where Georgia Championship ended up always selling and Crockett taking it over, we were all out on the road. And just the night before we showed up back to TV, they guaranteed us that, no, that's all rumors and blah, 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 blah. You know, it was all bullshit. We're not selling nothing. Then we get to TV and we're sold. You know, and the same thing happened at the Panama City. We had a big meeting at WCW the night before. There's big rumors that down here tonight that the show that there's going to be that the takeover, and I just want you to reassure everybody that that's all bullshit. It's all rumors. And we show up and there's Shane Owen and Jerry Briscoe and a security team, and they've taken over the truck. So, damn, I should have learned the first time when y'all bullshitted me. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Damn. Oh, I lost audio, man.
How about now?
I got you. Now I got
you. There we go. Jack Spade said, Mr. Patrick, this is fitting as well. When this mailbag drops, it'll be March 11th. And on March 12th is Mae Young's birthday. You just mentioned her earlier. Tell us some more fun stuff about Mae Young. What was it like? What was she like working with?
I went around her a whole lot. Pop told me about her. She was like, back when she was young and in, you know, making her living in the business, she was as tough as one of the guys. You know, Pop said he's seen her win beat up guys in a bar before, you know. I mean, she could fight. She was a badass. But she was all business. And I remember when I went to WWE, they had a deal where I think that she did a stink face to Eric. And as a rib, they had her. They put sardine stuff all in her drawers. And, man, they had her gimmicked up when she gave poor Eric a stink face, man. Bless his heart. He took it like a champ, man. That was kind of
her and Moolah. Her and Moolah were so great.
Yeah, man, I couldn't believe, and she was, it was incredible to me, all the things that they did with her. It kind of ticked me off a little bit. It's like, come on, man, this is an old lady. Show her some respect. But she liked doing all that crazy stuff, you know, getting planted through tables. And it was just still her being a badass, you know, because, like I said, she'd fight guys in a bar back when she was a young lady, you know, and won, and would win sometime, you know. She was just a badass.
So was your time with her in the same company? Was it just very short?
Just very short. Yeah, she was very. She was old and real quiet and laid back when I met her, and she wasn't whooping people's ass. You know, she could, I guess, if she wanted to, but she was just really kind of laid back. You know, when I got to know her.
Let's see. We got a couple more. Dirty Dog Darcy said, "Mr. Patrick, what's your thoughts on such thing as Bigfoot?"
Such thing as Bigfoot? Hell, I think anything is possible.
Bigfoot, Loch Ness, Chupacabra, Skunk Ape.
Anything's possible. I've seen a full body apparition as a child, so I know anything is possible.
What do you mean?
We lived in a house that was haunted. And we ended up, I mean, it wasn't like the Amityville Horror, you know, what crazy shit like that, but things happened, you know, and we ended up moving out. And one night I was in the second grade, man. I tell this story to this day. I get chill bumps in my arm. My sister and I, it was like a 3-level house. And then my sister and I bedroom was up the third level, and you'd go down the steps. And as you bottom the steps, if you hooked left, you'd go into the kitchen. And if you hooked right, you'd go into the bedroom, mom and dad's bedroom. So I was going down to get a drink of water. I come down the steps and I hook the left and right. And people, all our neighbors told us that they, whenever we was there, that there was a man that would be looking out the window, you know, because neighbors knew, you know. So I bottomed the steps and I took a left and stand. And it, you ever seen people when they vape? Somebody take a real deep vape and they blow it out. It's just this huge ass cloud of like vape smoke. That's kind of what it looked like. And it was like this, the street light was shining through our window and I could see this, like this cloud, like vape smoke, but there was a freaking man standing in the middle of this, looking out the window. Wow. And I freaked out. I've got chill bumps now, man. I looked at him and he turned and looked at me. And when he turned and looked at me, I freaked out. I got chill bumps all over me now.
It was that detailed you could see a face?
It was a man. But I could see, he was like, I could see through him. He was like part of the cloud, but it was a man. And I could see full detail, you know, and he turned and he looked at me. And I freaked out. I was screaming. I run and I dove into bed with mom and dad. And Papa always had a gun right there, you know. So boom, he's got his gun and he's in the house and nothing, nothing, oh, nothing, nobody, nothing there. But I saw that dude and he looked at me and it scared the living. I'm like a second grade kid. It scared the shit out of me now, you know. I'm a grouchy ass old man. I'd probably cuss at him now. You scared me, you son of a bitch.
You never saw anything since then?
Huh?
Like he never reappeared somewhere?
No, never saw him again.
Wow.
But I went by that house when I would go and work, and I never had anything happen to me until one time with my uncle that used to own the house. He rode with me. He said, "Let's ride by the house." I said, "Okay." And when we rode by it, and there was like a group of neighborhood dogs. There's like about 8 different dogs, mutts, all different sizes, different, you know. Every one of those friggin' dogs tried to attack our car. And the house is like at the bottom of this hill, right? And you round the circle, and as you round the curve, the house is right there on the right. You go up this hill. Them damn dogs chased us all the way up the hill. Once we got to the hill, they broke off and surrounded and went back down the hill.
What?
Yeah, and I looked at my uncle. My uncle looked at me and said, "That was strange." I said, "Damn right it was strange, man." But I rode by it by myself. I rode by it by myself several times and never saw anything, never had anything happen. But I can ride you right by that sucker right now. I know right where it's at. Show you, and, you know. And I always wondered. But I didn't want to freak anybody out or go knock on a door. You know, I know how I feel if somebody knocked on my door.
It's gonna be some bullshit.
Yeah. But I lived here as a kid, and we ran the hell out of this house, you know. But I could tell where the activity would happen and everything, you know, because we lived it.
That's wild.
Nothing ever, it wasn't mean, you know, it was, but things in my mom's would be moved. Her little jewelry from her jewelry box would end up in different places. And what got us to move was at the very bottom level, they had an old root cellar that was dug out at, like underneath the front porch of the house. And it had a door that led to it. And from the moisture coming down, the door was warped. And Pop didn't want us going in there because there was like old furniture that somebody had owned the house previously had left some shit in there, you know. And there were spiders and stuff down there. So Pop, he had to kick the door shut on the frame because it would be a warp. And he put like 4 or 5 nails in it, nailed it shut. He didn't want us going in there. So the next day he goes down there and all the nails are out of the door. They hadn't been claw hammered. They were like pulled out of the door and the door was open. And we didn't hear anything, you know, but it happened. And Pop's come up and he told my mom what happened. Says, "It's time for us to get out of here and get a house." And they found a house. They went and bought a house and we got out of there. But my uncle told us that it was there because he used to sleep in that same bedroom that my mom and dad was in that I ran to. And he had this big badass pit bull. And at the time, there was a door at the bottom of the steps that it had been taken off. And that dog would go and hit that door. When it's your footsteps walking back and forth up where my sister and I slept, you know, and that dog would go friggin' nuts trying to get up there, man. He'd pop his gun too. He had one all the time too. And then go up there. There wouldn't be nothing. Man. Nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, that house has got its thing going on.
Yeah, I can take you. It's in St. Joseph, Missouri, man. I can take you right by and show you exactly Woo. Where it is, man. Yeah, but that was I've never had anything else happen. You know, I saw that. And then those goofy dogs chases that, you know, that could be just, you know, if I hadn't have seen what I saw, I wouldn't think anything about
those dogs.
With all
the other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But man, I saw it. You know, and I'm just going out in public and told everybody. There people are like, man, you're a nut. But I'm not, I was just a kid, man, and I wasn't just scared. I saw a man looking out the damn window, and he turned and looked at me, and I ran. Man, I could have run one hell of a 100-yard dash at that point in time, man. I'm telling you, that apparition would have had to have been moving to caught my little ass because I was moving.
It wasn't going to get you that day. It might get you one day, but not that one.
No, it's going to have through popping his gun because I was gone. I'm out. My sister's up there. You can go get her.
My sister's up there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, go get. Leave me alone.
All right, let's get another one in, and then I'm going to get your thoughts on something that's going down in wrestling. Okay. Our last question from a listener is Mick Mack. What's up, Mick Mack? Good to talk to you. Mick Mack checking in, said, hey, mate, from Australia.
All right.
Any memories from the Kurt Angle and Eddie match at WrestleMania 20?
No, man, just it was – both of those guys at the top of their game, you know.
That was Madison Square Garden. That was 2004, big match.
Yeah,
between them, and it ends with Guerrero rolling up Angle with his feet on the ropes to win the match and retain the WWE Championship.
Yeah, they had worked because, you know, back then we'd do house shows. You know, we worked, that's back when they were running 300 days a year, and they would work and get things worked out on the road so that for pay-per-views and stuff, they'd be smooth. But man, both of those guys were at the top of their game, you know, at that point in time. I've heard Angle do an interview, and he said that he's felt that he'd come to the top of his game more when he was at some of the matches he had at TNA.
Really?
And I watched some of those matches back in there in a day, and I think I agree with him on that point. He was very, very good at the time that he was working with Eddie, but you can hit a whole different level of good, you know, when you get in your, when you find your groove and you find your niche. And he talks about that on, you know, I heard him talk about that. And if you watch, you'll see the difference. You'll see the difference. Look at when he was really thumping at TNA. Look at some of those matches and compare them, you know, to any of them, you know, even ones with Eddie, you know, great matches. Don't get me wrong. And he was very, very good. And those were classic matches with two guys that were really hitting at the top level. But Kurt actually hit a higher level than that down the road.
Isn't it crazy, man? What a great career by Mr. Angle and Eddie, of course. You said, two legends in that match at WrestleMania 20. Before we wrap up and get, make sure we get a Deep South wrestling plug before we get out of here as well. But before we do, it is recently announced they've started naming some of the names that are going to go into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, and I wanted to bring them up and just get your quick thoughts on them. There's rumors, not confirmed, but rumors that Haku will be going in. What's your thoughts on Haku if he goes into the WWE?
Very well deserved. He's made a name and an imprint on the industry, and super guy. Yeah, I hope he does. He's one of the guys that deserves it. He's one of the guys. He made an impact on every major company that he worked for, you know, around the world, you know, not just WCW and WWE, you know, they're Japan companies and you know, this, so yeah, definitely.
And a kind heart every time I've been able to meet him, but
super nice
all the stories
guy.
I hear is a shoe badass.
Yeah, boy, don't get him hot. You know, but it'd take a lot to get him hot. He's just so nice, you know.
Yeah.
But, man, but if he's going to come get you, you better watch out.
next up, I wanted to know, and this is officially announced for the WWE Hall of Fame. Did your paths ever cross with the legendary Bull Nakano?
No, never did.
Legendary, of course, female wrestler.
I've heard and seen, but as far as work with her or met, and I have not.
It's weird, you know. Your career with WCW and WWF, I'm always fascinating when we name one of these people that somehow y'all are crossing.
Like opposing magnets.
Yeah,
I never met Curt Hennig until late in WCW years. We had mutual friends and had worked at the same different territory back in territory days. But it was like always opposing magnets, you know.
Wow.
And we ended up meeting through Ray Traylor, Big Bubba, Big Boss Man, because he was one of our mutual friends. And we ended up meeting because Kurt was coming to meet him when we went and worked Minneapolis one time. And Kurt come by to see him. And he said, "Oh, I want you to meet him." He said, "Oh, hell yeah." So I got to meet Kurt then the first time. And super guy, super nice guy.
And last but not least, going in this year, WWE Hall of Fame, of course, that happened in Philadelphia when they have the WrestleMania weekend there. So very fitting in Philadelphia. They will be inducting Mr. Paul Heyman into the Hall of Fame. Nick, talk about Paul Heyman. And we know he's Hall of Fame worthy, but the argument with him is some think he's the greatest manager ever in wrestling. What's your thoughts on that and just where he stands in the when we all look back on wrestling history?
His contribution to the industry, he could be Hall of Fame for different things. You know, for his managing, for his creativity, his promos, it's just, you know, his office work, you know, and booking committee stuff. You know, he's a great mind as far as just a performer, you know, and natural heat. Always was able to get natural heat.
That's so much.
You know, I can't remember Paul being a babyface. I don't know. It's like they say, you got to get as hot as you can before if you're going to turn, you know, but I don't see a way to ever turn him.
He'll turn that night. That night, everybody will root for him at Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He deserves it. We're back to hating him.
He's put in the work for both companies and put in the time and the politics that happens with working in the booking committees and all that. Oh, yeah, he's put in his time and has paid his dues, man. And he definitely has earned that.
Congratulations to Paul Heyman, Bull Nakano. If it happens, Haku and whoever else they announce before that weekend. And when they announce more, we will come back and talk about it on this show. And see Mr. Patrick's interaction with him, if any. Nick, before we get out here, one more time, big show coming up, Deep South Wrestling, March 16th, Das Barbecue in Atlanta. Great venue for wrestling. It is free to attend. Buy you some of that good barbecue and some cold beer and enjoy a great night. And the lineup is starting to shape up from what I can hear.
Yeah, I got the lineup right here in front of me, man. We're going to kick it off with a bang, man. We're going to kick it off with Nauseousism taking on, have you heard of the Bosnian War Child, Spiral?
No, can't wait to check him out.
He's kicking it off with Nausea. We're going to have Prince Apollo taking on a young man. Smoke is his last name, and he can really go. And he says, but man, he's going to have to step it up because Prince Apollo is he no joke, man. And I've known this kid. He's like trainer good. You know, he's been a trainer. He's been a trainer in different places. So The kid that smoked is going to have his hands full. Great ladies match. Gemma Jules is going to be there, and she's going to be taking on the young lady from Puerto Rico, Nair Robles. She's in the country and is coming on, and she's going to be taking on Gemma Jules. We have a tag team match. Oh, man, it just pulled off. There we go. Have a tag team match where each team, Cosmo Martinez is on one side, Luka Daniels is on the other side, and each one is going to pick a mystery partner. So, and we got to see who each man picks. And they're going to be picking, and then they will announce who their mystery partner. Each one's going to announce that night who their partner is going to be. We got Tyson Maddox, young badass that just came from got his props. I was telling you, went to Japan. He's going to be taking on Professor Payne. Professor Payne now, he is a young green kid, and this is going to be a super big test for this young guy. You know, we're going to see if he's up for the task. You know, I give people opportunity. You know, and win or lose, it's going to be an experience for him learning. You know, if you get out there and you get the win, then great. You know, but if not, then learn something from it. Yeah. It's going to be an experience for him. And our main event, it's going to be a title match. The Deep South title is on the line. Skrilla the Great is going to be defending his title against Zach Mosley. And that's going to be I've seen him go both. I've seen Zach is back to being 100% healthy again and is on a roll right now. And Skrill is going to have his hands full. And they're familiar with each other. They've faced each other before. I don't know if you are familiar with Zach. He is part of the Exotic Youth. Tag team Exotic Youth. Yeah,
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Zach is one of the Exotic Youth, and he is going to have a title shot with Skrilla the Great, and it's going to be a great matchup. You know, the champion is at Deep South. This has to be a fighting champion. The title's up every time we have a show. So you're going to get to see Skrilla put it on again against another one of the top guys in the state. Man, it's going to be a great lineup. I'm anxious to get there. Like I said, like I got friends that are coming to see to check out the show. And we've made a ton of new friends down there, man. We got new fans that come in every time. We've got new young fans, your kids coming and playing and having a good time. So come down and check us out, man, at Zosh Barbecue on the 16th. It's a 3:00 bell time. The weather's going to be awesome. The show's going to be awesome. The food's going to be awesome. And we're going to have a hell of a time.
3:00 bell time. Getting that sun in.
Yeah, man.
That's going to be awesome.
A little sunscreen on my bald spot.
Dos Barbecue in Atlanta, if you're in the area or you feel like driving on the weekend of March 16th, head on over and get you an evening of great Deep South wrestling. And we appreciate you, Nick, man, for taking your time out of your busy week and answering everybody's questions, man.
Hey, thanks for sending them in. This is one of the most fun gigs I've ever had in my wrestling career. I enjoy sitting down and talking to folks and answering questions. Y'all keep sending them in. I appreciate it.
Everybody be ready. And, Nick, you be ready. I'm making this announcement. Okay. Next show, we might have a little something special. We're going to be in the middle of March Madness.
Oh, hell.
And so there might be some kind of bracket that we need to go over. Not basketball. Will be related to wrestling. So everybody stay tuned for the announcement of that. Might be doing a little March Madness fun somehow on next episode. But we want you to be involved. Cool. Make sure you drop a question. Wherever you're watching or listening to this, drop a question below, and we will get your questions answered. For Mr. Nick Patrick, I am Cassio. Thanks, everybody, for dropping us questions. Thanks, everybody, for listening and downloading. And thanks, everybody, for being a top guy or top gal. We greatly appreciated that. I'm Cassio. That's Nick. We'll see you next time on the Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick, Deep South.